I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
G'day there, this week's episode is with Julian Spence. Julian is one of my elite running mates based over here in Australia. He's won the Great Ocean Road Marathon on two occasions, going for the third in a row this year. He's won in 2015 and 2016, and pretty impressively split the marathon, that's a 44k race, and split the marathon in 2:24 last year, which is an amazing effort. He's also ran Melbourne Marathon a couple of times in 2:27 and 2:26, and we talk about that quite a bit in the podcast because I paced him when he ran 2:27 the first time, and then he paced me the year after, which was a bit of fun until he pulled out, of course, and things went pear-shaped. This year, he broke the Bogong to Hotham 64K trail race record, which has stood for 21 years, so a huge achievement there. And midway through last year, he opened the running company Ballarat, a specialist shoe company or shoe store down there, and we kind of had some really good conversation about the running industry and where to for the future there. Great chat, great bloke, super modest, but a champion guy, and I think you'll really enjoy this interview. Cheers. I must add that there's a few swear words in this interview, so if you've got little kids around, maybe a good chance to organise them to be in a different spot. Enjoy. Rightio, Julian Spence, welcome.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making some time out on your Sunday afternoon to have a bit of a chat.
Yeah, well, you know what Sundays are like, mate. Yeah. Hard mornings, easy others.
Tell us about that. What did you get out for this morning?
Long run, obviously. So down here in Ballarat, we normally hook up. Well, I think it's been going on for like 30 or 40 years, but 8:30 a.m. is the meetup point, and it varies between two locations, so it changes week to week. And if you're doing a bit more, you might go and do half an hour earlier or half an hour later. But if you come to town 8:30 a.m., today was at the Water Towers, and there's always one 90-minute loop that the boys go out for. So you know you can get 90 minutes on whatever Sunday you rock up to Ballarat. We had a massive group today, so it was really fun.
What's massive? How many?
Oh, I reckon probably 15.
Yeah.
15, like solid runners.
Yeah, and it's a pretty hilly loop too, isn't it? The one you do.
The one we did today was it depends who leads it. Normally, it's whoever the big dog is that day gets pick the route. And today we were, well, Mono was there, and normally when Mono's there, he tells us where to go, but Ash Watson called the shots today, and he had us going over what we call the dippers, which is like relentless up and down, and some longer climbs as well. So it was pretty much 90 minutes of just nonstop hills.
Yeah. How good's that? Massive group of people and all going a similar pace and having a bit of a chat as you go?
Yeah. I mean, 90 minutes just goes by. You have some solid guys just talking shit and making the time fly. By the time you get to like 20K, you felt like you've just caught up with your mates. And I mean, if you do half an hour before and half an hour after, that's nothing. So you're getting 2.5 hours in, just catching up.
It's super. Yeah, awesome. And Ash has got Comrades coming up, hasn't he?
Yeah, so he's doing like, today was a medium long run for him. He went, I think he went about 2.5 hours as well. But in the past few weeks, like he goes and does 90 minutes, then meets us for 3 hours, then does an extra half an hour or so afterwards.
Insane.
So I think he plans on doing a few sort of 4 hour runs before that one.
How far away is it?
12 weeks.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, yeah, he's starting to get fit too. And I don't know, it's a bit, 12 weeks out, you kind of start to get worried. That's when people get hurt a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So it's still a long way to go.
Yeah, no, I must get him on before he races just to, because he hasn't done anything like that before, has he?
No, not really. He's done some, he's done some funny stuff. Like he does a lot of Sunday doubles and stuff. And I think he did one Sunday where he did like 30K in the morning and 30 in the afternoon or something.
I think I saw that on Strava.
Yeah. I think he did it just to see what it would feel like.
Yeah.
Bit strange.
As you do, yeah. No, it's credit to him though. He's got some awesome times, Nick, especially when he was a junior.
He
was insane. But let's talk about you, mate. Do you want to maybe introduce yourself a bit? People will be 4 minutes into this conversation be thinking, who is this guy?
Well, I tend to sort of know a lot of people, whether it's through the running industry, footy circles down here. I used to play a bit of football. I would play cricket. So a lot of people that I know a lot of people through the sports industry. And being part of the running community is, I guess, what I do now. So I own a running store in Ballarat. Used to work at the one in Geelong. I helped out organising Geelong Region Cross Country for a while. So you tend to sort of form pretty good relationships with people, and you talk to people from other clubs and maybe from other stores or that work for different brands. And I feel like I'm part of that running community pretty strongly now. I like it a lot. So it's so fun to, I guess, go for a run in the morning and then head into a store that we can make and we can mold to however we like, but really just talk running all day long. And a lot of people like struggle with talking about running with other workmates that they have or with their family, and we have people coming in asking us to talk about running, so it's a lot of fun there.
Yeah, so you're pretty modest as well, because you're also an elite runner. You've won the Great Ocean Road Marathon twice. You're the record holder for the Bogong to Hotham trail race. And as you said, own the running company Ballarat. When did it all start in the running world?
We all did like school cross country and stuff. And I had no training or anything, but I seemed to go okay in that. But I never really got into running until I was about probably 21 or 22. I quit playing footy because I was really enjoying the running we were doing in pre-season and wanted to enter a few events. And like footy, just, I'm not a big guy, so I used to get beat up a fair bit on the field, and I would be too sore to actually do the running I wanted during winter. So I decided to call it quits one summer and just started running. I got a bit of guidance from Brett Coleman from Geelong. He was pretty good in sort of showing me the ropes as to what to do. Eventually, like I did, I went the wrong way, like the opposite way to what most people do, start shorter, low mileage and creep up, whereas I just sort of felt like I was a bit older and probably not very smart, didn't know anything about running, and just jumped into trying to do marathons straight away. And I mean, it only works, you can only get away with that for a certain amount of time. So from about 2009 when I started running, I was consistently injured to probably 2014 when I really started to string some months together without breaking down.
Yeah, my first memory of you was, I remember Ryan Christian were down at State 5K Champs one night at Lakeside. Oh, it might have been, no, it was Old Olympic Park.
Yeah.
And I'd never heard of you before, and I remember talking to Ryan before the race that he'd been doing a bit of training with you, and you like come out, and I reckon I ran like 14:45 or 47 or something that day, and I reckon you would have been like 14:30 and you just kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah, it was. I was training with Sean Kravitz, who and our coach. I was getting coached by Mark Gorski at the time, and I was super raw, like very low mileage, but had this massive chip on my shoulder, thinking, I want to be here now, and I want to prove, like, that was the race that I thought I need to beat some guys today just to prove, like, that I deserve to be here. And that was probably the first race I reckon I ever beat Sean in. Like, in training, he used to smash me. And so I remember that race finishing and going, okay, now we can start to build. Because before that, it was like, I'd done nothing and I was always injured. And I remember sort of seeing guys in that field and pegging it as something that I really wanted to do well in. Yeah. But yeah, and even since then, a lot of the guys from that race, they still run today, and they're like, there's some guys there that have run way faster, like yourself, who have just improved dramatically from back then. So,
probably at similar spots. I think that was my first ever track 5K. I think I put my PB down as about 20 seconds quicker than it actually was, just so I could get a run in that A grade.
Yeah, that would be the same with me, for sure.
It was kind of interesting that first 5K, because you're so used to doing like 15s and 3s. Well, I was probably the opposite to you. I come from the shorter stuff going up, and yeah, it's a long way, that last 2K, and I remember finding it very difficult, and you guys went past and smashed me.
Yeah, and splits weren't relevant to me, so I was hearing, like, Scrivo at the time was Ryan's coach, and he would shout the splits out, and I was sticking pretty close to Ryan just because I didn't know what the hell to do. So I thought, he's around where I'm at, I'll just stick to him for a bit. And so he was shouting all these splits out, and I'm like, I wonder if that's good or bad or fast, or does that mean we should speed up? And in the end, you're on your threshold, and you know, like, you're pretty, most runners know when they can't go any faster, and that was definitely us at that point. Yeah. I think I do remember maybe like two laps to go going past you.
Yeah, that was fond memories, I'm sure.
And then Ryan would have gone past you, and no one would have liked that.
Yeah, Ryan was always good, though. I was thinking the other day how good he was for, like, even starting that Steigen race.
Mm.
Like, did you have much to do with that as well, or was that just more him and Brett to get that off the ground?
Yeah, they definitely put the work in on that one. Like, it used to be the Geelong 10K Championships, and then they just, like, it was basically Brett who said, oh, we've got no good 10Ks, I want to run a fast 10K. And so he invited all his mates down from Melbourne and put some beer on at the end, and then Steigen started to give away some socks, and then it just grew from there, and now it's probably the second best 10K in Victoria.
Yeah, I remember, we still stayed at the caravan park, and there was just eskies of beer, and yeah, it was unreal.
It was a fun time.
It was pretty raw, which was really good.
Yeah, and just a bunch of guys who want to run as fast as they can, and no one cared about winning, really. It was just there was one year that turned into a bit of a race at the end, but most of the time it was trying to break a PB.
Yeah, spot on. And even, I remember that year we all got to request a song, and it would go over like the PA, and yeah, it was fantastic.
that was Ryan played a part, but Brett Coleman drove that boat, and he's still the driving force behind the 10K anyway now.
Yeah, it was probably more Ryan's like confidence just to put everyone together.
Ryan had the contacts too, and would just, like, tell people bullshit about how many other people are going to be there, and in the end just marketed himself, got this race going.
Yeah, no, spot on. But back to you though, so finished playing footy, slowly got into the running. You were over in the States at one stage, weren't you?
Yeah, I lucked onto that, like, pretty big. I was there, I was doing, went back to uni, like, I was a labourer, for my dad. He was a builder, so I was doing that for a long time, and it just wasn't agreeing with the running. Like, I was out there all day just digging holes, carrying bricks, doing just shit jobs, and I'd be fucked for like the end of the day. I have to go and run now, and I was just spent. So I thought, this, if I'm gonna get better at running, I have to get rid of this job. So I ended up going back to uni, and the first year was so, like, you can just train so much better at uni. You basically, you don't have to go that often, and you have late mornings. And I decided, oh, I'm going to go on exchange to America, but I wanted to go somewhere where I could continue to run. And I ended up finding this school, like this Division II school, that was quite strong and had, even though, like, there's no, they didn't recruit like fantastic athletes, but they had a really good program where guys worked hard and improved a lot. So I kind of just sent a few messages to the coach, and he didn't really think it would ever happen. And then one day I sent him an email. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll be in San Francisco in a few days. Like, how do I get to Chico, which is the school? He's like, oh shit, it happened. Cool. And so I ended up just sort of running with that team for the semester, and made some really good friends, and saw how it is to be a dedicated athlete, like a college athlete. And it's, you see a team there as well, like the college teams. It's like playing footy again. You really care about the guys next to you, and you're running not just for yourself, you're running for someone else. That's different to over here. Like, I kind of tried to instill a bit of that in the Geelong team that we had going when we won the premiership, and that was awesome, but it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. What about like the support and like the expectations to race, and what was that all like over there?
Oh, it was just chilled out. Like, no one really put you in a position that you didn't want to be in, that's for sure. You might get asked to run a 1500 at an event just to get some points, but that's why you're there. Like, you kind of love that. We get another race. It's spread over. Normally the meets go for 2 to 3 days. So you might run a 15 on the first day and then have the 5K late on the second day. So like it's intensive, but it's fun. And it's kind of what it's all about, is scoring points for the team.
Yeah, for sure. Before we go on, we might just give a bit of context. Do you want to go through your PBs from 3K out to the marathon?
Okay. So 3K, 8:19, 5K is 14:19, and 10K I run 30:40, half is maybe like 68:20 or something, and the marathon I ran 2:24:07 at Great Ocean Road last year.
Which we'll talk about that a bit later on, because that's insane. Like, knowing that course, and that's the split, isn't it? Like, the race is 45K or something, isn't it? 44?
Yeah, 44 and a half. It works out as, I think.
Yeah. So you've come back from the States. Is that when you started training with those boys and you kind of like Julian Spencer's arrived? Was that where we're up to?
Yeah. Coming back from the States again, just got injured. So basically disappeared from the map for freaking 2 years. I did an ultra marathon when I came back. Like, I was just so injured, I was so over it. I thought, I'm going to try something different here. I'm going to just get out and run long and not do much intensity. And I entered a 100K race and did that down on the Great Ocean Walk. And it sort of was different, but I got an injury again after that race. So that put me back. And
100K, what kind of pace were you clocking?
For the 100 average, I think I was like 5:58 or something.
Yeah, right.
But that includes sitting down time, and it includes like walking tons that I was like sitting on a chair just at the top of a hill thinking, this is the stupidest thing that I've ever done. And I can't get to any cars. If I had a car there, I would just drive home. But yeah, the upsetting thing was it was like another 45 minutes until I would get to an aid station where I actually could get in a car. But with the ultras, by that stage, you've reached a high again. It's like a roller coaster. So, that was at the Great Ocean Walk. You run from Apollo Bay to the 12 Apostles along the cliffs and the beaches and stuff. And it's like one of the best trails that I've ever been on in my life.
Yeah, I could imagine. Be pretty scenic.
Yeah, it's real nice. There's spots down there that like you can't get to unless you're hiking in. So it's isolated and it's wild. It's right on like the Cape Otway. You run past Cape Otway Lighthouse. So it's pretty exposed. That you can get some good days and you can have some shockers down there.
So you get yourself right after being injured for a while, enter a 100K race, and get yourself injured again.
Yeah. So 2011. Say goodbye to the next 6 months.
Yeah.
And then just slowly from there, started working at the running company in Geelong, and just slowly, like, regaining fitness and doing it bit by bit. So not getting carried away. And yeah, it just started to click a bit. I wouldn't have like 3-4 month gaps with injuries. So I got this really good build up going for Melbourne 2014. And I was following training by a guy called Scott Nicholas, who is the owner of the running company.
Yeah. So how important was that for you?
Yeah. He changed my thinking on how to train for events. He has some pretty good heritage, like as a runner himself and as a coach. He was assistant coach to Vin Lenana at Stanford University, and he used to work for Nike in Oregon, and I'm pretty sure Alberto coached him to a couple of his marathons. Used to go out on the bike with him and give him drinks on his long runs. So he's got this philosophy. He's got different philosophies to sort of how a lot of the guys in Australia do it. So he kind of explained to me like why we do things and how. It's very similar to Josh Harris training, actually. It's very specific stuff. So like there's the Australian system, I guess we call it, which is the mono Tuesday or speed work Thursday, hills Saturday, mid long on Wednesday, and a long run Sunday, which is like just what you do year round. But this is all about being specific for the exact race that you're going to do and spending a lot of time at race pace, and running distances that are probably a little bit closer to race pace in training. So I guess as an example, workout wise, there's a lot of long tempos involved. There's a lot of long marathon. Basically one of the key sessions is 40K at about 90 to 95% of your marathon pace. So if you're trying to run 3:20, then the idea is to run about 3:26 to 3:30 for 40K, just probably about 3 to 4 weeks before the race. And it sounds really difficult, but if you progress through that training system, you actually, it doesn't feel difficult at all. And the race is supposed to be just the next progression of that.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting system, and I really think, like, I got very fit off it, but I got injured right before the race, probably about 2 weeks before, and just did my head. I was just way too focused on running a certain time, and as soon as you drop off that certain pace that you're aimed for like 4 or 5 months, your head space is ruined, and I didn't adjust very well to that. So the race panned out really poorly.
Well, that's go back to the training a bit though, because talking about Josh, like we had him on a couple of weeks ago, and he said the same thing, and we're kind of talking about if you can survive it, you'll run a good marathon, and you might take you a couple of build-ups. Like if you can do 2 or 3 of those build-ups, I guess probably for him, he's just banked that, and now he's gone out and ran 2:17. And Scott was 2:18 guy, wasn't he?
He was a 2:18 guy, but he was a better runner. Like he'll be the first to admit that he should have gone faster than that. And he did one of those 40-kilometer runs in training, and I think he was averaging the pace that he like to run 2:14. He was probably in 2. I think he sort of says he was in about 2:12 shape, and then he had a similar issue to me, like got injured right before it, which may or may not be a trending thing with that program. But he ran that 40K tempo at 2:14 pace and was only 2.2K from running that run.
Yeah,
and that,
crazy.
Yeah, so that's what Josh does a lot too, is that you see that he's training his training runs are super impressive, but now that he's run 2:17, they're not that impressive anymore.
Yeah.
So they were a lot closer to his old marathon PR, and a lot of guys were going, oh, why is he out there doing this? Like, he's basically running a marathon every week. But it doesn't – he was never a 2:22 guy. He was the 2:17 guy. He just hadn't run it yet.
Oh, mate, when I was 50 metres behind him halfway through Berlin, I was thinking the same thing, because I knew my preparation and I knew his, because I was following him on Strava, and I was like, this shouldn't be right here. Like, yeah, it just took him a while to get there.
Yeah, and he stuck at it, and he got it done, and now, like, what's next now? Now that he knows he can do it, obviously it was something sort of maybe a little bit psychological for him on race day, but because you know he could have done it in training. You look through his training and go, this guy's going to run 2:16, 2:17. He just never did it. Now it's done, and he'll probably look for that next goal.
Yeah, for sure. So that 40K tempo, what else would you do?
During the week, we would do like a long tempo at marathon pace. So you'd start sort of earlier in the program, 14K, and you'd build up to maybe 20 to 22K at marathon pace, just as a weekly session. I did some workouts like, these are some of the workouts that kind of I've looked at and done for the next, like for last year's Great Ocean Road. I did a similar program, but I adjusted it myself a little more. And I progressed from doing, I would do like a long interval session, and I progressed from doing, I think it was probably about 5x3K at marathon pace with 1K float at about 85% of marathon pace. So in the end, you're getting a 20K interval session, really, or a fartlek, not really intervals, but because you're not stopping. So it's that progresses to going up. And I think the biggest one that I did was, I think I did 4x6K at marathon pace with 1K float. So nearly 30K of workout.
Yeah.
But really only 24K at marathon pace with float recoveries.
Yeah. I reckon, yeah, I did the same. I just started experimenting with some of those ones before Berlin last year. And I remember I did 5x5K with 1K float. So it was 30K all up.
Yeah,
and ended up averaging like 3:20 for the 30K. And then I kind of knew that, you know, that would be a similar pace that I could hold for a marathon.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, after doing like 8 weeks of workouts like that, you know what it should feel like. And you know if you're not on, and you know what 2 seconds off that pace feels like.
Yes.
It just gives you this amazing, like, intuitive rhythm. Yeah, I that's why I like it.
Yeah, and you've got to be super careful with these sessions, though. Like, if people are listening to this thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to try bang that out tomorrow morning, what would you say to that?
Oh, yeah, you're going to hate it. Firstly, you're going to hate it. It's going to feel like it has to be progressed. So in this, at the start, the very beginning, I might do 400s at this pace, and the 400, it will be at marathon pace. And then you'll just float it with maybe 400. And so the next week we might take it to like, 1Ks. And then as we get towards that, the closer you get to that peak, which is that the race, the longer time you spend at marathon pace. But I think it's very strenuous. So instead of doing that every week, like I did in the last build-up, like for this year's marathon, I'm going to do it every second week. So I'm going to try to take a little bit of stress off the body and maybe not work as hard in the build up.
And then alternate that with a long run, a traditional long run the other week?
Yeah, definitely. So I might go like long tempo on the Wednesday. Sunday will be an easy long run, maybe like 40K, but in the bush, just casual pace. And then the Wednesday to follow, I might do, say, like a traditional workout, like a, well, I guess we'll call it an Australian-type workout, like a monofartlek or something.
Yeah.
And then on the Sunday, I might go 16K easy, and then I might come home 16K at marathon pace, or I might do 40K at 90% or 95%. And, like, use that as the very hard workout for the week.
Yeah, and you've almost got to do the training to be able to do this training. Like, you can't just jump into it straight away. Yep. You've just got to build.
Yeah, so this is like, we're talking about the final sort of 7 to 8 weeks of the training block. But before that, we're like doing more general training the range of systems, basically to prepare yourself to be able to handle these workouts.
Yeah, for sure. And are you going to do Great Ocean Road? Is that what you're talking about, the next marathon?
Yeah, yeah. So I like it there. I don't think it's as slow as everyone sort of says it is. It is hilly, but it's not hilly where you can't pick up the pace on the downhills to make up for the uphills.
Yeah.
So some courses are hilly where you go up and you think, shit, that was tough, it knocked my pace. And down the other side, you're like, damn, it's so steep I can't run fast. That's going to hurt you. But if on Great Ocean Road, like, gradual decline in pace up the hill, gradual increase in pace down the hill, and you've got a more even, like, you've got an even pace there.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not scared of it. Like, I guess if you looked at the profile on that, you could, but I think you can run faster.
Anyone ever won it 3 years in a row?
Oh, I don't know. I can't find results from, like, 2 years ago. It changed hands, and before that they, I don't know, the Kenyans, some Kenyans come over. They used to pay Kenyans to come out and do it, and they weren't very good ones, but they were still running probably like 220, I think, out there.
And didn't they, like, used to win, like, nearly every event? Like, they do 2 events on the Saturday and win the marathon on Sunday?
They would. They would just cash up.
Yeah.
And they were like some serious E-grade Kenyans that were just from farms and stuff. I don't know how they found them, how they afforded to get here. There was always a visa bungle, and they would be at the airport, like, the night before the race, not being allowed in the country. And everyone questioned why are we doing this? Why are we bringing these guys out, paying for them to come out, basically just, like, giving them all this money? And they don't even speak English. The media stuff is terrible. But I think John Craven, who used to run the I forget what his company's called, but he used to put that race on, and he used to organize the Otway Classic, which was the really prestigious relay event out in Apollo Bay, when all the big guns came over, like, just the best guys in the world would be coming down for this Otway Classic. And he wanted to bring a bit of that back to the town, but it just never took off like that.
Yeah. So you ran 2:37 when you won in 2015, 2:33 last year. And that was a shocking day. I did the half marathon. Mm. And it was just windy, and I don't know how you did it. I think you pretty much ran the second half quicker than I ran a half, and
I was having, like, the best day that I've ever had. And I rolled through in 69 something through halfway, and just was thinking, oh, this is it. This is the day that I run 220. And kept going, like, got to about 25K and thought, I still feel amazing. And then, like, you hit the hill there, and I'd always, like, you know the course, so you keep a little bit back. I had a mate, Brett Coleman. He was coming out on his bike from Apollo Bay. And I sort of said, oh, what's the back like? And he goes, oh. He didn't really want to tell me, because as soon as we got up around that corner at Cape Patton, you just full on into the strongest headwind that you can imagine. And it, running down that hill in the pass, that's where you pick up. Your pace can go from, like, say you're running 330s. You can run, like, 305s down that hill, and it feels like you have a low heart rate. So with what happened this year is you turned into that wind, and you had to push down the hill to keep your pace. That's how windy it was.
Hmm.
So I knew it wasn't on then. It was just about trying to maintain and not look too embarrassing in the splits afterwards.
I heard this isn't the opinion I have, but I heard someone, I don't know where it was, so I remember the comment that it was a waste of a marathon, the fact that you'd splitted 2:24 on a course like that when you could have went to Japan and ran 2:19 for that kind of similar effort. Or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like, I think if you're looking at your time as being, like, the number one thing to take away from it, then yes, that makes heaps of sense. Like, why would you go and do that? However, the race offers $3,000 for a win.
And hometown.
And it's the one that I like to do, exactly. Yeah. Like all my friends are there. It was the race that we launched the store that day, or like we announced the store's opening that day. We had a bunch of guys out there in our tops, and it just, I finished, and it was like some pretty good like interviews about the store and stuff. So that was like the perfect race for me at that time.
Yeah.
Like it's the home marathon, so you have to do your home marathon.
Mate, it's just winning a marathon, especially that's a big one. You take out Gold Coast, Melbourne, Sydney, like really, what else have you got? Maybe Canberra is probably about level, but that's a big, high-profile race.
Yeah, it's funny that no one goes there anymore. Like, it's a lot of money. It's not that slow. There's a lot of build-up. Like, say you have a sponsor who wants you to do well, then, like, I encourage people to come down and do it. I wish more people would. It would sort of make it more prestigious, make it a little less lonely sometimes out on the course.
Yeah.
So I can't wait for people to come. I think there are guys coming this year, so that would be good.
Yeah, who's coming?
I'm not entirely sure. I just heard a few whispers. I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
But I know that there's been a bit of talk about someone coming down. Because, I mean, $3,000, that's a lot of money for people. That takes you overseas.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you come and do that? Especially if it's not like that's – if you can – there's guys out there that can run 2:22 and run the next day, so they could do that and win $3,000 if they want it.
And then you bang out a quick one in spring.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. 10 weeks away. Good luck with the training, gearing up for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've committed to following the system for this marathon, so I've decided to train the way that Mona trained for his as much as possible. I thought, all the boys down here do it. I want to train with a group for a while, and I thought let's experiment a little bit, and I'm kind of enjoying it. So it's going to be interesting on the day because I won't have those long workouts in me, but I'll have a similar proven method of training.
So that interests me though. You've just banged on about how good this other system is.
Yeah.
And now you're flipping that on the head saying I'm going to stick with the Australian system.
Yeah, well, I reckon I'm still like too young and fresh and inexperienced to be able to decide on something so early. I think I need to try a few things and learn how different systems work before I make a call on what I think is the best system.
Yeah.
And that's part of me doing it like this is I'm going to see how it goes. Like Mona is, obviously a legend. He ran 2:08 off doing exactly the same thing every day for 15 years. That I know, like, it won't work for everyone, but it's good to try it if it works and see if it works for you.
Yeah. So Monday, Friday is easy, like a monofart, yeah, like a Tuesday session.
Pretty much a fart, like 20 minutes or something around about that. 6x1K maybe.
Yeah.
And then Wednesdays we do, well, mid long run for most people. Thursdays is speed work, so 300s, 400s or 200s basically. And then Saturdays is hill loop. So we have some sort of tempo loops around here that are just really hilly that you do about 6K tempo work on. And Sunday is long run, like in the bush, and it's all surrounded by plenty of mileage. So you get this very strong aerobic base. And I guess the argument is that he's strong. He knows he can get the distance in for the marathon because of all the extra work, the extra aerobic stuff that he does. So when he runs hard, he wants to make it count, like on a Tuesday and a Thursday.
Yeah.
And sure. Saturday.
Now it'd be interesting to follow your progress there.
Yeah, I'm really interested too. Although, like, it's hard to sort of simulate how it's going to feel at 35K by only running 20-minute hard workouts every second day.
Yeah, yeah. But if you go hard, like, that's still underrated, that fartlek session. Like, it smashes you.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And I always go out too hard still.
Yeah.
No matter what.
What's your PB for it?
Oh, I'm not sure, actually, because down here we get sucked in by getting a lake time out of it.
Yeah.
So you start and finish at a, you start at a spot and then the lake is like 5.9K and you look down and you see what your lake time is and then like you continue going, but I'm not exactly sure where I finish up. I think I don't know exactly, but we normally just look at our lake times, but it sucks you in and then you try to race yourself every session. I think we need to mix up where we do it a little bit.
Yeah, and it gets to the second half and you're not sure if you're like on a float or an effort, like it just blends together because you're smashed. Yeah.
It turns into a tempo.
Yeah, I know exactly that feeling. Let's talk about Melbourne Marathons 2014, 2016. I was there. Yeah. You kind of touched on it before. I paced you through that first half and you were aiming for that 220 in 2014.
Yeah. Yep. So, like, 220 that day was going to happen. I reckon looking back, I was probably about a 10% chance to run 220 that day, given the little bit of the real injury niggles I had beforehand and where I was at mentally. It would have had to go perfect to run 220. Yet we went out at 220 pace, not the right thing to do really, and it just puts you on this line, and there's only like 90% chance it goes the other way, basically. So it's how you deal with it when it starts going the other way and not during that event. Like, that was pretty, I was really almost embarrassed about how that happened because I was just so intent on running a certain time that I didn't want to run any other time. And then it doesn't work like that in the marathon. Like, things go wrong. It's about sort of how you handle when things go wrong. And I handled it very poorly. So I ended up running 227. I think we went through in 70. So it was pretty average.
What do you mean you handled it poorly? Talk to us more about that.
Like, you start to get these real negative thoughts, say about 25K, and it starts to get hard and you think, today's not it. Like, I just ran a 330K. That means I have to find 10 seconds somewhere else down the road and I feel like shit. So it's never going to happen. Then the next K, like, my watch was giving me way too much feedback. I was just constantly getting disappointed by seeing slower splits. And then it gets to a point where, in that race, I got to a point running back along St Kilda Road going, oh, I don't need to be here anymore. I've already run 227. I don't care. Like, what's the point in finishing? I don't want to run 225. I wanted to run 220. So you're getting dissatisfied with whatever you're going to see at the end. Negativity in the second half of a marathon is always going to produce a bad result. The marathon is so difficult that you have to have a positive outlook during the entire race, I think. You can't let anything slip in, otherwise it will crumble you. And that's what happened with me. Like, too many negative thoughts from the 25 to 30K mark. And then from then on, it was like, oh, the race is over. I'll try to get to the finish. And I was disappointed with how I handled that. So retrospectively, I would have loved to be able to get to the 25K mark and think, all right, I've made a bit of a mistake in the first half. I've gone a bit hard. Let's try to salvage this. Let's get in a nice positive frame of mind. Let's hit 32K, know there's 10K left, and just turn the watch off, run it as strongly as I can to the finish now.
Stop thinking a bit.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the watch is useful in holding yourself back, I think, in the marathon, but it's not useful to try to be hitting certain splits. Because if you're not feeling good enough to hit a certain split, it means you're working outside your capacity. And you know you can't do that in a marathon. It has to be under your capacity.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, it was even a hot day. And I don't know, I think I was the same boat. Like, I went out there 12 months later and you paced me through the halfway and I ran exactly the same.
It was pretty interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah. You couldn't have...
Yeah. You looked a lot better than me though when I dropped you off. So I was expecting you to roll on.
Yeah, but it's a funny thing, and I think we probably both were a bit naive. I remember thinking, yeah, probably run under 220, 223, I'll tell people, because that's probably what, you know, worst case scenario.
Yep.
And, like, even, you know, the way we kind of, just floated through that first half, and it's kind of easy, then it gets a bit harder, and then just you're gone.
And it creeps up on you.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how many kind of, you know, the lactic acid you feel in an 800 or half marathons that you do hard, it's just a whole different ballgame, the marathon.
Yeah, it's like, it's just a weight on your shoulder that gets heavier and heavier until you can't breathe properly or move. And we just gone too hard in those races, mate. That's what happened then.
Yeah.
We went too hard. We were running outside our, I guess, our fitness. That's how I looked at it, because we had some preconceived idea that 220 is what we can run. I think we probably can run that if we do it properly, but on that day, 220 was too far away from us.
Yeah.
So it's like it's like the guy who goes to run 3 hours, who goes through in halfway in 90 minutes, like on the edge. He's going to run 3.5 hours that day. You just know it.
Yeah. And that second half of Melbourne's hard. Like, although it's pretty flat, it's just lonely and there's a bit windy out there, and yeah, it just zaps you.
Yeah. You're thinking like that because you have this negative memories of it. But I've heard of some guys who go, oh, Melbourne's fantastic. I love coming back along St Kilda Road and like crossing the bridge. Like, I just felt great. So it's relative, I think.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
I guess that around that mark, though, like that 220 mark, there's not a lot of both. We were kind of solo the whole, you know, you had Kerwin that year and I had a couple of people floating around, but it's very lonely that second half when things are going bad.
There's no one to work off. All you do is see like flashes of your family or your coach, and like you see their face going, oh, shit. Should I smile? Should I clap? Like, he looks terrible at the moment.
Yeah, my parents didn't even recognize me when I was running to the stadium. They're like, nah, that's not him. He doesn't run with that technique.
Yeah, yeah, look how bad he
looks. Yeah. You know, he's wearing the same singlet he was 10K ago, so I think that's him.
Oh, yeah, it breaks you down. It's a monster.
It does. So then you went back last year, 2016. You're in ripping shape, but it was just a shocking day, wasn't it? I was still overseas post-Berlin.
Yeah, well, last year I was actually in pretty average shape. So I rocked up with very low expectations. I'd hurt my back a few times during the build-up. I'd never got any workouts that I thought were good. So I was on the start line thinking, okay, this could go either way here. And I turned my watch off to not show me splits. I just decided to run with a group. And when they slowed down and we slowed down a lot, I just slowed down and just relaxed and thought, this is good. Like, this is fun. I just get to use other people to gauge off. And ran probably like the most comfortable marathon of my life. I didn't feel like I had that real heavy burden on me. Like, towards the end, I felt good. I felt poppy in the legs, and there was a bit more of a race feel. Like, there was a pack of guys around, and one guy broke off, Zach Newman, and I thought, oh, good, I'm going to chase him down. And there were a few guys that had dropped off me, so I knew they were around, and we were collecting everyone from the front. So there's like this real like stimulus going on, and positive, like, again, it's like the positivity of passing people and still keeping the guy in front of you within on a leash, it just drags you through those really hard times. I finished, the time wasn't great or anything, but it was a good finish. I think I come fifth out of the, like, a really solid field. So showed it was a hard day, but it also showed what a difference it can make when you're not a slave to your watch out there.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But it doesn't matter how quick you are, anyone can take that point on board.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. I think learn how to feel in a marathon, and you don't need a watch.
Yeah.
If you're at halfway and thinking, oh, this is a little tough, then it's too late. You need to be going through halfway thinking, wow, yeah, this is good. Like, I've got the brakes on. You need to still have the brakes on at 30K.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% agree with you. And then, so that was October 2016, and then you entered the Bogan to Hotham, 64K.
Yeah, that was like, that's an iconic race. I don't know whether you've heard of it before, but it's been going. It was it originally started after a guy tried to do it in winter on skis. So he had a crack going from Bogong. He skied across the high plains and everything, and then he died, like, I think it was about 3 or 4K from Hotham. So he got like 60K out of the 64 to the end, but then he perished. And so they decided to make a running race after it, and it's been going for ages. A lot of good guys have had a crack at it. It's known as, like, kilometre or mile for mile, the toughest race in the country because of how brutal the climbing and descending is, and also because of how you have to actually, like, pick the pace up and run at a decent click across the high plains. So it's brutal. Like, anyone who's been up the staircase will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So, and that was in start of Jan, wasn't it?
Yeah, yep. So you can't really, unless you live in the high country, you can't run climbs like that and prepare properly. So we climbed, like, I tried to get a bit of climbing in around here, did a 50K run and kind of went up there pretty blind, like, as to what the actual course would be like. I looked down at one point on my watch and I saw 2:25, I think, and shit, this is normally when I stop running. Like, this is my race over normally, and I'm only at about, well, I think it was probably about 20K or something. So you know you're in for a long day when that happens.
Yeah, for sure. But you smashed the record.
Oh, I didn't smash it. I finished under it just. My watch failed me coming up the last climb, so I had no idea where I was in terms of the record. So, well, I got, basically, like, you climb down, or you climb up a Swindler's Spur, which is the last massive climb from the bottom of Hotham to the top, and it's pretty relentless, but it's also hot there, so the sun starts hitting you later in the day and you get hot and can't really drink too much because there's not many stops up there and you're just fatigued in general. But so I was pretty happy when my watch went, because again, the less that I was seeing, the better at that point. Yeah. And I got to the top and then everyone was shouting at me and I'm like, oh shit, I must be really close. So I sprinted like the last 100 meters. And then they said, oh no, you had 4 minutes. So I'd done this all out sprint and just cooked myself when I didn't have to.
But stood for 21 years though.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I'd seen some guys that, like, some really strong runners who had a crack at it. So I didn't tell him. I think in the end I might've said to a few people, oh, I'd love to break the record. And I was asking people, I'm like, what do you think? Do you think I can do it? And no one would say yes. Like, no one. Even, like, Blake, this guy, Blake Hose, he's a really good ultra marathoner and he's a trail runner. And he had a crack the year before or the couple of years before. And he was like, oh, it's a bit tougher than you think. Like, you're not going to be able to run that fast along the top. And I'm like, oh, fuck it. I reckon I can do it. And so I went out with a plan to run as hard as I can. And in the end, yeah, got it by 4 minutes, which was cool.
How'd the body pull up from that one?
Oh, immediately it was the worst that I've ever felt. So emotionally, just destroyed. I couldn't even really control. Like, I was just a mess at the end. Like, didn't know what to think, or I was just so glad it was over. I was like upset, like. I wasn't upset, but it just breaks you down. Like, the climbing one of the climbs goes for about 80 minutes long of you just going uphill about 20% gradient. And you just have these thought process, like, through 80 minutes of just totally uphill walking / hiking, you end up in a position where you're just thinking a lot. And so to get to the end after all the thinking's done and all the worrying, and it's just like a real relief to finish. But then I couldn't really move at all, and I was very, like, I was really nauseous. And I think I had some kidney issues because my back hurt so much, I couldn't maintain like a posture. And yeah, the next day I was actually all right, and I came back fine. Like, I've been able to run since, and I've actually pulled up better than a normal marathon.
Yeah, right. Maybe there's something to that.
Yeah. you have to walk parts of it though. That's
cool. Yeah. What about when you enter those trail races? And because it's a whole different crowd, isn't it? Do they kind of look at you like you're this road runner, 2:24 marathoner entering our world?
Nah, not at all. There's a lack of respect. Like, they have their own fanboys. So they build up these trail runners to be like absolute gods, and they don't give the road guys much respect at all, even though most of them are running more K's than the trail guys and are probably better athletes than they are. They'll always be all about the guy who hiked the furthest this day, or I don't know. It's pretty small kind of community. It's changing now though, because a lot of the faster guys are coming across. Like on the weekend at 6 foot track marathon, Vlad Shatrov, he's a quality runner, came across 1 6 foot track. Courtney Atkinson, ex triathlete, almost, I don't know whether he still does it, but he's a gun runner, came across, came second. Thomas DeCanto, who won Melbourne, won that trail race the year before. So it's changing, and people are starting to realize, like, oh, these guys are actually quite good on trails as well. Like, they're still running. It's a running race, and the best runner is going to win in the end. So marathon times, like, don't mean a lot to these guys. It's more about, like, oh, how much elevation did you get in your training this week? It's a different crowd, that's for sure.
So when you stand on the start line, are you like, I'll show these blokes just what I'm about?
Oh, a little bit. They give you sure. Nothing? Yeah. And even like, there was an article done by their biggest ultra website in the country, and they basically talked about this other guy who was on the start line, and they said, there's only two guys who can break this record in the country, and one of them's starting this race, and it's not a question of when he's going to get the record, it's like, is he going to get it this year or not? And I was so like, I was just reading it going, okay, like, this is actually pissing me off a little bit. This guy's done nothing aside from a few mountain races, and like, they're good, like, mountain races are great and all, but there's nothing to suggest that he's like this fantastic, amazing runner. And why is the person who has put a few results on the board getting no respect here? And that's just part of like the culture. And it is changing. Like, it is, the more good runners come across, the more respect they're getting. But it gave me a bit of fire in the belly, definitely reading that.
Well, it's changing because of blokes like you. Like, you've got that versatility to go to trail, run a road marathon or 10 or half marathon, but you can also jump on the track and run quick.
Yeah, I think like it's good to, it would be hard to train specifically for like trail races all year. You're going to lose that turnover. You don't run very fast out there. Like, I think it's good to stay on the track quite often. I think it's good to jump in with the guys for their farlets. The best trail runners are actually doing those things as well. It's the best runners winning the races. So, like, you're not going to find a guy who can smash out a great marathon who also couldn't run a good 50K, or a guy who is amazing at 12K cross country who wouldn't go and just like kill everyone in the 20K trail race. It's just that they don't do it yet.
Yeah, so where do you see the future of trail races going to be? Like, a bloke's going to jump across more money, Kenyans? Yeah,
they definitely will. This, like, without going into the details, like Blake, you might not have heard of him, but he was probably one of the most looked after athletes by a company in Australia, and he's part of the trail running scene. So there's definitely more opportunities now for runners to get into the trail and make almost a career out of it. Like, there's some big prize money through Europe. America has prize money. They have like professional trail running teams. The more people get into that stuff, like, trail running's booming, and there's a lot of ex-triathletes there and guys who skip road running totally who want to build it. Like, they want to build that scene, and they do that by jumping on like the young talents like Blake and stuff. And yeah, if someone wasn't that fussed with road running, then they'll get a real life for them in trail running.
Yeah, for sure. Watch this space. B But even just being connected with the environment and, you know, not looking at your splits, and that's what appeals to me about it, to do it one day.
Oh, it's fun like that, 100%. But there's no difference between what we did today, going out and running. Mona's done it for 30, 40 years, whatever. He's gone out and run on trails every Sunday, come back, and we all talk about how nice that was. That is trail running. No one calls it trail running. We don't wear trail shoes, but we are doing exactly what the trail runners are doing. So we're getting hills in. We're running on single track. We're getting in the bush. Like, there's no roads involved. So, I mean, it's been going on for so long. It's now that there's a name for it.
For sure. Let's change tune. Talk about the business, the running company, Ballarat.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from? Like, you're working at the one in Geelong and then you're just like, I can do this. Whereabouts? Ballarat. Go.
Yeah, you just nailed it.
Pretty much, yeah. Business plan.
Yeah. My partner Bree, she came and started working at the running company just a bit after I did, and we
ended up. Did you meet her at work?
Yeah, met her at work. Yeah.
Dangerous.
Yeah, she was into the boss.
Yeah.
I pulled a few. What do you call that?
Be careful here.
Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, I was the manager there. Bree was the assistant manager. And we just learned, and Scott was really great. Like, he showed me how to do everything behind the scenes. He would obviously teach us about the specifics of the footwear, because he was very knowledgeable about that, how it relates to someone's mechanics, how different shoes can help with different injuries, what podiatrists and physiotherapists like to see in shoes, and how they like to be... have a relationship with their retail partner, which is us in the store. So he taught us a lot about building relationships, about the technical aspects of the product, but also about running a business. So it got to a point last year where we thought, it's time. Like, we're ready to do this. We were putting a lot of There were a lot of things at the Geelong store that we were driving ourselves, and we were in a position where we thought, let's drive these things for our benefit now, and where are we going to do it, basically? And we didn't even discuss it. It was like, we're going to go and do it in Ballarat, because Ballarat has probably the best running culture in Australia. It's got this heritage of cross-country runners, the Lake Wenderee, it's just been known as a running destination, and we had a lot of the running community coming from Ballarat to our Geelong store. We got to know a lot of people, so I didn't really have that many connections in Ballarat. Bree didn't either, but we were coming down for a few months before we actually pulled the trigger, and I went for a few runs with the group and thought, yeah, this is going to be good. We're going to love it down here. And we do. We thought we just love it. Like, Ballarat is a really cool place.
So there was no hostility about, you know, you're coming in, you're not a local, you're going to try and steal that market?
Well, yeah, there probably was a little bit. And Ballarat is tight-knit. So they look after their own. And they are loyal customers to local business. So when we opened, there was probably a lot of people, and I've heard it sort of through the grapevine, that are sort of thinking, what do they want to do in Ballarat? What do they want from us? But it's not really what we're about at all. Like, there was obviously a market for someone to offer a running specialty store in town. So a place where this massive population of runners can come and find things that they can't find anywhere else, that they were either traveling to Geelong for or Melbourne for. And basically just, we wanted to become a hub where the runners of the town can come in and chat about anything running. So it's really cool. At the moment, we might be sitting in work and we'll just have a local runner come in, and he'll tell me about how he used to buy shoes from John Foster at the runner's shop, which is used to be over the road until it shut down. Then he'll tell me about everyone's got a Monastery, so they'll reel off their Monastery. And then they'll be like, oh, so you still go out and run in the group? And you're like, yeah, yeah, the group still leaves at this time. And I run for Ballarat Harriers. Oh, the Harriers, yeah, I run for those guys too. And you, like, within 5 minutes, you're just another runner to them. And it's pretty easy to see through someone who's fake and there to take advantage. But we just want to provide somewhere for runners to feel like they're at home. And I mean, our run club, we do a free run club every Wednesday, and it's just like we get 40 people now.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's just, and it's not like, we don't even do it from the store most nights. So we go out and run on the trails. There's no connection to the store whatsoever. It's just, I provide a place for some, like a starting point. And if I go and mark a track through the trails, and you can rock up at 6, we're all going to leave at 6. You don't have to follow us. You can go whenever you want. Like the arrows will be there later if you want to go later. And it's just pretty much just about trying to be honest with people and not take advantage.
And it's not like you're, you know, you're ripping off the other little shoe store that's been there for 50 years around the corner. Like, you're competing against probably Rebels and Athlete's Foot and big franchises, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're a different store to that. Like, we fit shoes with a lot more knowledge and experience, for one. I'm not going to get in, like, I won't talk about anyone else, but we look at when a customer comes in, before we even get a shoe on the foot, it's probably a 10 to 15 minute conversation about what they want from their shoes, where their running's going, what injuries they've had, what they're training for, what their footwear history is, and then we might look at their foot. And so it's pretty specialist. It's never going to be that big because of the time we spend with each person. Is you can't just be flogging shoes out like every minute. It's like normally the fitting process that we go through is about 45 minutes, and you just can't sell that many shoes in a day with this business model. But that's not the idea behind the business model. Isn't to make us millionaires. It's to give someone a place to come and actually get proper specialized and expert advice.
Yeah, there it is, right there. That line, I reckon. And you know, I've been to the Athlete's Foot, any of those big franchises, and there's always, you know, the 17-year-old kid who's just knocked off school and she's trying to tell me what the best running shoes are. And it's a bit of a fraud system if you think about it. Like, this kid's probably never ran in their life. They've done some quick course about fitting shoes, and here they are trying to tell you about it.
I'm not going to go too much into that sort of thing, but we see a lot of ill-fitted shoes come through the door, and people wondering why they're not running consistently, like they're getting injured a lot, or they're wondering why their shoes don't feel good. And the footwear and the running industry in Australia is very poor, I think. That's why the running company stores, like, I guess, have been more successful, is because in the past the shoes haven't been sold properly. For one of the reasons is what you've mentioned right there. The other reason is that the marketing of the shoes and the price point of certain shoes is, like, in the stores that you've been previously gone into, they get marketed as shoes that are for the good runner. So it doesn't work like that at all. We try to break down this myth that a more expensive shoe is going to be better for you. And we see some, like, without mentioning brands or anything, but the most expensive shoe in the industry is also the most popular shoe, but it's so niche. It only fits probably, it's only specific for maybe one in every 20 to 30 people who come through our door.
Yeah.
Yet it's the most popular shoe in the industry. So,
and you guys don't even have prices on your shoes. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we try to take that away, because otherwise we would just have people that are getting sucked in by buying expensive shoes, yeah, thinking it's better for them.
Yeah, it's pretty smart.
Yeah, well, it can confuse some people, but what it does open up is our conversation with them. So if someone comes in and says, oh, how much is this shoe? I'll say, oh, that's $200. so this shoe does this, and it's different from this shoe, which is 260. So the way that we like to do things in here is we want to see your foot, and we want to make sure like you're getting into the right shoe. And so it opens up a conversation, whereas previously if you walked into a big box store and you just put a shoe on and tried it on yourself, you're not getting any conversation, you're not getting any help with your shoes. So the main reason for not having a price up there is so that we can actually have a one-on-one discussion with our customer, kind of just so that they will trust us a little bit as well.
And do you think that's where the running industry is going, more specialized?
Well, it should be.
Yeah,
I mean,
for sure.
There's so many shoes out there, and there's so many different sorts of feet. Like at the moment, the best advice you're getting is asking someone on Facebook, really. Like, I see it all the time. That's what works for your mate or what works for you is going to be totally different for what works for me. So why don't we have these like staff members who are experienced help us with that? Like, I would go to, if I was going to buy a bike and invest in a bike, I would go and talk to someone who has been in the bike industry for a long time, fits people to bikes every day, rides the bikes himself, has an interest in bike riding. Like, so why wouldn't you do that with your shoes?
Yeah, 100%. And especially the rate that people get injured.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to look after yourself.
Certain, like, shoes aren't always a contributing factor, but there are some shoes that can create issues that other shoes don't, and there are some shoes that can help offload certain areas that other shoes don't. So say you have like a specific injury, the shoe that you're in right now might not be causing it, but it might not be offloading the bit that we need to offload, or it might be exacerbating it. So you can come in and go, oh, this is my shoe, this is my injury, can you just tell me about what's going on? And we'll try to provide a shoe that minimizes the risk that they're going to get that injury again. That's basically it.
Yeah. And where can you see that business going forward? Like, do you do online sales? But I guess if you can't see the people, there's no point.
Yeah. So, like, for me, it makes no sense to do online sales because it just totally goes away from what we're about. So online shopping is about taking a risk on something that you're not getting any help with. Or if you don't need help in a store, you might be able to get $20 off the price or something, and that's totally fine. But if you're wanting to reduce that risk that something's not right with your shoe, that's like, we need to have that conversation in person. We can't do that over the phone. The running company, like, there's an overall owner, Chicken his name is, and he's started to do like fittings via the post and via video analysis online. So for someone, say one of his customers recently is from like this really outback town that has no shoe store in town, but still, that customer still wants to know what shoe's right for them. So she takes some footage of herself running on a treadmill, sends it through, fills out like about a 15-minute questionnaire of like a footwear history, takes a few photos of her feet, sends them through. Chicken will send out a couple of shoes. She'll try them on, jump on the treadle with them, basically pick the most comfortable, send the others back. That's how we would do an online sale.
Yeah.
Bit different to eBay.
Yeah. But what about someone like me, always runs in the same pair, you know,
yeah,
get the same pair now and then. I'd much rather send you guys me $150 and get you to send me up a pair rather than going down to a massive franchise to support them.
Well, we'd appreciate that, mate. Because
yeah,
what you would find is that massive franchise, that's not the store that's sponsoring that local race you're entering. Or
yeah,
it's not 100%. The store that's putting on a local run club or doing a podiatry night or chipping in for a local charity who's like doing a charity run or something. So like everyone sort of, I'll use Spikes as an example, but we get Spikes in to the store, and this is Spikes are so small as part of our business that we would survive 100% without them. But we get the Spikes in there purely so we can offer somewhere for someone to come in and try on a Spike and have a conversation with them about their athletics. And we sponsor the local Ballarat Region Athletics Centre, like we're a financial sponsor down there. So that, like, the local running store offers more than you think it does. So it's we really appreciate support from local people, and if when we receive that support, we love to give it back as well.
Yeah. And you get that. Like, I follow you guys just on Facebook, but that sense of community is really important to you guys. And, you know, rain, hail, or shine, you're doing that that run club once a week, and yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, well, it's what we are. Like, we look forward to that run. It's almost like there's like an unwritten no dickheads policy at our run club, and it's held true. We've not had one dickhead show up yet, so it's been awesome.
That's good.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to talk to you about, mate, is the life balance. So, you know, you're a business owner, you're an elite runner.
This is the tricky bit, isn't it?
Your missus probably hates you sometimes because you're never home. How does that work? Like, tell me about your routines and how the week looks and the morning before work. I know you wrote a really good blog on it, which is on Runner's Tribe. I'll put that in the notes. Mm. And I remember reading it and I was just nodding my head the whole time because it just... Sometimes, yeah. I guess people think that, you know, you're an elite runner and you don't have a life, but it's pretty hard to fit in the running sometimes.
Nah, there's no shutting the store early, and there's no saying, hey, I can't fit you in, like, to someone who wants to get a shoe at 5:45 at night, and that fitting takes 45, so we're running in the middle of winter at maybe 6:30 at night or something. That just doesn't happen. So at the moment, like, the number one priority for me is the business, and that, I mean, we were in there six to 7 days a week, basically. The good thing is that we open the store at 10 a.m., so we get there about 9:30. So that gives us a chance to run in the mornings. Fitting the run in after work, that's the tricky bit. But really, that's what takes 100K a week runner to 160K a week runner, and it's the difference between running maybe like, say, 2:30 and 2:20. So there's it has to be done, basically, and we make it work, but there's sacrifices on Bree's end. So she's very good about allowing me to get out and run while at the same time having dinner ready for when we get home, or she might go in and shut the store and I might be able to sneak away maybe 10 minutes early and get down to a session with the guys. But training has suffered over the last 6 to 12 months, definitely because of the store. As it gets more settled, we'll be able to have an employee come in, and it's just starting now where he can work like a day where maybe I can do my big workout in the middle of the day. It's just so hard. Like the blog post that I wrote about it, it just seemed like it nailed it for a lot of people, because I had so many people sending me messages and stuff saying, oh, so good. Like, that's what I feel like. Like, I know the struggle. My missus is awesome. She looks after me. It made me realize how much she does. And it made me, I guess, feel better that there, I had guys in America sending me messages saying, oh, so good to hear that you're still in the struggle like us. So it really, like, I think when our runners come into the store, we can talk about how it is to sacrifice and the grind just like they can. And it's one of the good things about, I guess, having the conversation with them, is that we know exactly what a runner feels like. When that guy goes, oh, the kids were up late last night, so that made the 4:30 run difficult, we're going, oh yeah, like, that's probably worse than what we've got it, but I know what you're feeling.
And that's been one of the big things about this podcast. Like, I asked a few people about what guests they wanted on, and it wasn't, you know, the Olympic guys who sit at a coffee shop and train super hard. It was how the guys that next tier fit in their training and working and family and kids and all that stuff, like hearing about their routines to get it done.
Yeah, let's get some let's get some tips.
Yeah, like, I just quit work a day. That was that's one good tip, but maybe you are not in a position to do that if you just started your own business, I reckon.
Headlamps, like, yeah, it's going to get done in the dark no matter what over winter. So you get a good headlamp that makes everything that little bit more comfortable, a little bit more safe. Like, you'll find yourself out there a lot more in the mornings if you got something that actually makes it easier. So I reckon like that's probably one of the real hidden secrets, having a good headlamp.
Yeah. And I want to finish off, mate. You got any mantras you live by?
Oh, nah.
Nothing. No motivational quotes above your bed.
Oh, look, I just read this really cool book. Like, oh, actually, no, I do. It's Rod Dixon. You probably know it.
I think I read this one in an interview about smashing beers and training hard.
Yeah. All I want to do is drink beer and train like an animal.
You're a bit of a boutique beer fan too, aren't you? A bit of a craft beer.
I'm just smashing one during this interview, actually. Before my second drinking? Run. The Rover Session IPA. So I've gone to mid-strength so I can fit a few more in each evening without waking up rusty. And this is like a nice little mid-strength, but it's still got flavour.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Rightio, mate. Where can people follow you online?
The Running Company Ballarat Facebook page. That's where I'm at. Instagram, Bree runs that. She's pretty creative. She puts some cool stuff up, like Rod Dixon quotes. And I do Strava as well. So Strava, like I don't try to hide workouts or anything. Whatever I do, I put it up. I put down my paces, and there's nothing impressive enough to freaking try to hide, that's for sure.
And what's your handle on Strava?
Oh, I don't know. Isn't this for your name?
Just
I
think it's just my name. Spence. Yeah, it'll be. You'll be able to find it.
Ballarat, it will come up, Ballarat.
All right, and then about upcoming races, so Great Ocean Road, any lead up?
Great Ocean Road, depends on my back. I fucked my back again, so I'm just starting to get back into it.
Hey, who are you running for during winter?
The Ballarat Harriers.
The Ballarat region, are they still like that over there?
Yeah, we're in Division 2, I think. So we got some climbing to do back to Division 1, so it'd be a bit sad leaving Geelong. A good bunch of guys down there. Everyone's super friendly, but I got to train with the boys now. Race for the boys. It's our life. It's our home.
Build yourself in that community even more.
Yeah, well, I like it. I'm already feeling like there's a toughness about Ballarat that you don't get anywhere else. It's like a little bit colder, a little bit hillier. Everyone runs a little bit longer, and they're a bit tougher.
Be cold down there today, wouldn't it?
Nah, shirt's off, mate. All good.
Shirt's off. It's only like 25 up here. I thought it'd be snowing down there today.
We're not that bad.
Oh, I don't know. I'd see the news now and then. Makes me cringe.
Oh, the winters are bad.
Yeah, I could only imagine.
Yeah.
Rightio, mate. And then Berlin Marathon later on in the year.
Oh, yeah. So Berlin, for sure. There's always like a time goal set attached to a fast marathon, isn't there? So I'm going to go and try and knock off a few goals there as well. We've got a real, like, you're going back?
Yeah.
So
you booked any accommodation yet?
It's happening as we speak. We've got like three couples that have locked and loaded on one. So I think you might miss a room, buddy.
No, that's all right. I've got just before the race booked, but I'm looking for something a few days before that. But I'll have a look. It'll be all good.
Yeah. Sorry about that. We haven't booked that's yet, right. But like from Geelong, there's like seven people going, and then it's from be awesome. From Ballarat, there's another five or something. So it's just going to be hard to get it all. It'll be fun after party though.
Yeah, for sure. Rightio, mate. Thanks for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me, mate.
Appreciate the chat. Giving up the time on the Sunday arvo.
Now it's time to go out. Ballarat tradition is a second Sunday run, so I've got to go get it done.
How far will you go?
Oh, 6 to 10.
Yeah.
Lap of the lake.
Big day.
Nah, it's not like some of the fellas.
Yeah, true. Rightio, mate. There you have it. That was Julian Spence. Had a super fun interviewing him. Really chilled out. Great chat. If you get the opportunity, Google Julian Spence, his runner's tribe, column blog that you wrote about working full time and trying to fit that grind and that juggle in. I know I really related to it and would highly recommend you having a read of that. Also, if you're in Ballarat, go down there and pick up some shoes. As he said, kind of support the locals and really figure out if you're wearing the right pair of shoes for your feet. I know they'd be super grateful. And yeah, follow him on Strava and stuff and just kind of see the kind of hard effort he puts in. It'd be interesting to see how this new system for his marathon preparations go. Once again, really grateful that he gave up some time. He's a busy man and it was good to get hold of him. Loved kind of reminiscing about our times at Melbourne Marathon where they both went disastrous for us both times. That was good fun. Thanks for checking out the show. If you think someone might like it, just let them know. That'd be awesome. Cheers. Also, a couple of people have asked what the opening and outro music is, and it's a song called On Fire by Zebrat, so Z-E-B-R-A-T. You can get it off the free music archives, and I'll put the link like I have been doing in the show notes for the last couple of episodes. Cheers.
left here that haunt me.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.